Dribble drive now and a block shot by Kara Eiler. Kara wants to take it all the way here for St. John's Tipton. Blows by the defense. Layup counts and a foul on Burlingame. Kara Eiler from one end of the floor to the other after a block shot gets a layup and a chance at a three-point play for the Lady Jays, and maybe just the energy they need now in this third quarter to start to make a run.
Dusty with a call last night. St. John's Tipton Lady Blue Jays punching their ticket to the sub-state championship game tomorrow. Also, the Thunder Ridge Lady Longhorns punching their ticket as well. And with a wrap of the games last night, we'll let Dusty start with 1A, work from there, and then I'll give a recap of the Bullitt girls last night against Riley County.
Yeah, St. John's Tipton, as we mentioned, it was funny because right at the end of that that cut, I came in and led. They did start a run, an 11-0 run St. John's Tipton did in that game, and they ended up pulling away and led by 18 at one point. They win it by 13, 40-27 over Burlingame last night. Lauren Dubert had 16 points, and Kara Eiler added 14 in that victory for the Lady Jays. So they move on to the championship game as they're now 19. Excuse me. They're now 19-2 on the season.
You're like Alan Fisher. You're all choked up.
I know.
Something in the air.
They're 19-2, and we'll move on to play Hanover in the championship game tomorrow. Hanover won 53-21 over Donovan West. Lady Wildcats are 21-3 on the season now, and we've just received word that that championship game will tip off at 2 o'clock tomorrow in Clay Center. So if you're headed over as a fan or want to see the games, 2 o'clock and 3:30 are the championship games, 1A Substate tomorrow in Clay Center. Also, other scores from last night, 1A Substate at Waubonsie here on the east side. Rural Vista finished out Southern Cloud season with a 64-29 win for the Leddy Heat there. And then as you look out west at Great Bend, Barton County Community College, Russell, the host. Again, they had to move that to Great Bend as Osborne played Central Plains in girls action last night, and Central Plains wins that one 91-22. Osborne finishes their season with the loss there. But as Wade mentioned, Thunder Ridge stays alive in the 1A Substate at Waukini. Trigo Community High School's Thunder Ridge won 49-40 over Otis Bison to move on to the championship game right now, scheduled to be at 6 o'clock. Against Golden Plains, who won 41-32 in overtime over Dighton in the other semifinal there last night. So Thunder Ridge against Golden Plains for the championship there in 1A girls at Waukini. So that's a recap of all of our area teams there competing at the 1A substate tournaments last night.
Okay, and we do know, here I go to Acacia's website, Central Plains girls against Atwood Rollins County, that championship game at, well, it's supposed to be at Russell, but it's at Great Bend now, Barton County Community College. That's a 2 o'clock start. Okay. Central Plains, Atwood Rollins County for the girls' championship down at Great Bend in Class 1A. That'll be at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, the girls' championship, which would mean the boys will be at 3:30 coming up tomorrow. So the Osborne boys play tonight. The late game against Quinter at 7:30. And if they win that, they'll have a quick turnaround and play tomorrow at 3:30 against the winner of Sylvan Lucas Northern Valley, who plays tonight at 6 o'clock. All those games are at Barton Community College in Great Bend, moved from Russell after had boiler issues. And as I pull up the Waukini 1A substate, they have changed those as well. So Thunder Ridge girls will play in a championship against Golden Plains at 5:30. Golden Plains undefeated, won in overtime over the bottom seed last night, 41-32. As Dusty mentioned, Thunder Ridge knocking off Otis Bison 49-40. So that'll be 5:30 for the girls' championship there at Waukini. And the boys' championship then should be at 7, and it is there in Waukini. So that makes sense because you knew Central Plains is going to have the girls and the boys make it to the substate finals, which is why I was a little bit surprised they could have put them in the same substate had they chosen to. And they didn't.
Yeah.
And you knew that was pretty much a given. And then Osborne was in the same substate with the girls and boys, the same location, I should say. And I thought Osborne gets split. So anyway, that's what we have. All that available to you at ncksports.com and also at Acacia's website as well. All right. Have you gone through this? Well, let me recap last night. The Bullitt girls, they fall to Riley County last night. Riley County made 8 3-pointers after making 9 against Minneapolis earlier this week. And it was one of those games where Bullitt just – they got up to a 7-4 lead, and then they just couldn't buy a bucket. And Riley County's defense was good. Their zone, they played Beloit, you know, pretty well. They had a good scouting report, and that was to kind of pack it in on Shea Larson and anybody that drives, and then kind of leave people open on the outside. But yet, at the same time, they're really good at closing back out on the shooters. Beloit got some good looks, but I wouldn't say they had, like, wide-open, absolute great looks throughout the game. But they had some shots that they normally would make that didn't fall last night. And Riley County had a good scouting report and took away Beloit's leading score in the contest. And it was a good game plan, and it helps, too, when you make 8 threes. You know, Beloit makes 8 threes last night. It's a whole different game. Riley County made eight. Beloit made three. And Beloit was up 7-4. Riley County goes on a 16-3 run to close out the first half. And then Beloit battled all the way back and cut it to four early in the fourth quarter. And then Riley County once again with a big run. They go on a 16-2 spurt and close it out. And they win 49-32. Third straight year the Beloit girls have fallen in the sub-state semifinal round, as the Beloit girls lose 49-32 in their year with their sixth consecutive winning season. 15-7 was their overall record. And five seniors playing their last game last night. Trinity Wagner, Breezy Schroeder, Kylie Mim, Tia Ehlers, who was out with a broken nose last night, and also Sydney Barrett, who was our NCKSSports.com athlete of the game. She had 9 points. And the block of the game went to senior Kylie Mim for HR Block in Beloit. And our connection of the game with Jessica Meyer with a fantastic dish ahead to Portia Cooper for her one bucket in the ball game. As Beloit didn't have a lot of bench to work with last night because of Ehlers being out with the broken nose. And then Riley County was a little bit deeper. And I think Beloit got a little bit tired at times there late in the first half and late in the second half as well. But the effort was there. The hustle was there. The competitive spirit was there. But sometimes you can, you know, Beloit did a pretty good job protecting the ball until, you know, midway through the fourth quarter when the game was, for the most part, kind of out of reach at that point. But they just didn't make shots. So, you know, we sit here and say, well, if you don't turn the ball over, you're probably going to win. Well, you still got to make shots. Mm-hmm. You can end up having two turnovers, but if you can't make shots, and last night Beloit just didn't make some shots that they normally would. And at the same time, Riley County had a really good game plan. I thought both teams played good defensively. It's just that Riley County, they were really good moving the ball when Beloit went from man-to-man to a zone, because they kind of had to, because they didn't have a deep bench. So then they, you know, that's a way to rest a little bit with the zone. Got a little bit of foul trouble. And Riley County end up, you know, doing a pretty good job at dissecting the zone defense and moving the ball around to get some open threes, and to their credit, knocked them down. Riley County's had 26 consecutive winning seasons in girls basketball.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
Pretty. Beloit, six in a row seems pretty good, and then Riley County, 26. Yeah. So congrats to Lady Trojans on a nice season at 15-7. And best of luck to the five seniors in their future endeavors. All right, we focus now on tonight.
Yes, tonight we'll kind of do the same thing. I'll start in the 1A brackets here and then work our way up. Tonight on, first we'll give you our broadcast schedule on Katy Country 94. It's 3A sub-state semifinals between Beloit and St. Mary's. Also online video at nckssports.com and audio at katycountry94.com, Beloit and St. Mary's. Pregame at 5:45 and tip-off at 6 o'clock for that one here this evening. And then on Z96 Point through the lake, we've got the St. John's Tipton boys taking on Blue Valley Randolph over at Wabunzee High School this evening in Alma, Kansas. It's 5:45 pregame, tip-off at 6 o'clock. St. John's Tipton, Blue Valley Randolph again on Z96.3 and katycountry94.com, the sub-state semifinals at Wabunzee.
And let's hear from Lance Bergham about that matchup as they take on Blue Valley Randolph from the TVO.
We definitely don't pay any attention to records when you're playing a team in the Twin Valley League, because, you know, you don't get too caught up looking at that. We know they got three kids that are pretty good. They drive to the basket extremely well. They like to get inside. They like to do some pump fakes and just be really under control there. They crash the offensive boards extremely well, which is the one thing that we've really kind of been struggling with here lately.
So that's the matchup tonight that you're going to have, and that will be interesting because the TVL, you can't look at records, and so St. John's Tipton's going to have to play well.
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to come up and show up. And the thing that concerns me there is, like, if they like to pump eight, get in the inside, Brady needs to stay on his feet, Brady Pullen, stay out of foul trouble tonight, because there's been times where he's gotten in some foul trouble in games. So that's the, obviously that's why Coach Bergman probably brings that up. You know, we got to make sure we're staying sound defensively, doing the right things. So. Again, St. John's Tipton Blue Valley tonight on Z96.3, pregame 5:45 and tip-off at 6 o'clock. Other games tonight in the area, Rock Hill's out east. They're playing Hanover at Clay Center tonight at 7:30 in sub-state semifinal action in 1A there. And then as you look out west, the Osborne Bulldogs are in action tonight at 21-0, taking on Quinter, who's 7-15 in that first round game in Great Bend. That's a 7:30 start time. The 6 o'clock game has Sylvan Lucas at 15-5 against 21-2 Northern Valley. So that's 6 o'clock against Sylvan Lucas, Northern Valley, and 7:30 Osborne against Quinter in 1A boys sub-state action. If you missed any of those brackets or want to see the schedules for your favorite area teams, check out nckssports.com.
All right, the Bullet Boys, a matchup tonight on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Pregame at 5:45, tip-off at 6. Also, live video stream at NCKSports.com via the Bullet Trojan channel. As Bullet's the number one seed, and they're 20-1. They've won 13 in a row, haven't lost a game since early January. They're playing good basketball. But this is a scary game tonight. St. Mary's 13-8, and here's why it's scary. St. Mary's 13-8. But they started the year 8-1, and then they had three major injuries. They lost their point guard for the season, who was averaging 13 points, 6 assists. They lost a very talented 6'8 freshman for 10 games due to an injury. And then one of their bigs inside, 6'4 kid, he had to miss four games and has been battling a nagging injury throughout the season. St. Mary's then struggled without some of these key players, but now they're starting to put it together. They've won three of the last four. They're a team that has size. Not a lot of teams can match up with Beloit's size with Tate Thompson and Bryce Mason. It sounds like St. Mary's can. Now, St. Mary's a little bit inexperienced. They've got some experience and some inexperience. They've got a guard that's made 72 threes this year, which has tied St. Mary's school record. So they've got some size. They've got some depth, even though they've had some injuries. They're getting healthy at the right time. And they've got a kid that can flat out shoot it. And they've got a point guard that's pretty quick as well. So this will be an interesting matchup tonight. One of the advantages Boyd may have is that St. Mary's does have a young point guard because of the injury to their more experienced point guard early in the year. So turnovers has been a bit of an issue for St. Mary's, even since they played better recently. And they've also played more zone recently, which means they've been more susceptible to offensive rebounding, although they are a good rebounding team. So this is going to be a good one tonight. And Beloit and St. Mary's, Coach Eilert talks about the matchup, sub-state semifinals in Class 3 at Riley County tonight.
Well, they're a good team. They've had some injuries in the middle of the year that kind of hurt their record, but they've got size, they've got guards that can shoot, and just do a really nice job of changing up defenses. And, you know, we're going to have to come out and we're going to have to limit their three-point shooting and at the same time not allow any, you know, post activity close to the basket. And then offensively, we're going to have to score the ball. They play a nice 3-2 zone. They go man, a little half-court trap at times. And so they really try to mix it up and keep you out of rhythm. And so, you know, we're going to have to come out focused, ready to go if we want to move on.
This will be an interesting matchup tonight. I'm looking forward to it. And the winner will move on and take on either Riley County or Council Grove in the championship game, which they have not moved those times yet, according to Keisha. But there has been some talk that those games would be moved up tomorrow at Riley County. The girls' championship, Clay Center versus Riley County. And the boys' championship, the winners of the two games tonight face off tomorrow in the ultimate destination, the sports arena in Hutch for the Class 3A state basketball tournament. So looking forward to this one tonight. There's going to be quite a bit of athleticism and size and quickness on the floor. And former K-Stater Will Spradling is the head coach at St. Mary's. His second year has done a nice job with the program. So we shall see. I'm interested to see the 6'8 freshman because it sounds like he plays more on the perimeter and inside, which seems scary because three more years of eligibility. Well, people over in the Mid-East League are going to be sick of seeing that kid.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if he's already
had 19 points, 5 rebounds the other night.
To be playing on the perimeter at 6'8 as a freshman.
Yeah.
He's going to cause some issues,
I would imagine. So be interesting matchup tonight. All right. There's something that took place here this week. The Kansas State High School Activity Association has suspended Zeta Perez for the rest of this basketball season and is vacating Mays South's first 6 wins because of her ineligible presence on the court. Perez moved from Valley Center, where she lived with her mother, to the Mays South District to live with her father. Her father lives across the street from the school since 2007. Perez moved in with him over the summer. The parents have split custody since Perez's father moved into his Mays home, her mother, Lyman Klump, said to the media. According to Rule 18 of the Keisha Handbook, if a student's parents or a legal guardian, in case neither parent is living, make a bona fide move to a new permanent residence in the vicinity of the new school to which the student transfers, the student is then immediately eligible. Although Perez moved to a new residence, and for her it would be a new permanent residence, her father did not. Therefore, she would have been ineligible for her first 18 weeks of Mays South by Keisha Rule. Had her dad moved next door, there would be no problem right now. If he simply just moved next door, changed his mailing address, permanent residence, bought the house next door, or may moved into a rental next door, changed their residence, this would be all good. Here's the thing. The Mays South and Valley Center athletic directors needed to fill out a certificate of transfer and a transfer hardship, which is completed for students. Keisha Executive Director Bill Faflick said Keisha never received a hardship form. The suspension is being appealed, but if it and the removal of six wins is upheld and the Mavericks make it to the state tournament, which, by the way, they're in the sub-state semifinals and are in the finals, actually, sub-state finals, and they should make it to state, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The Mavs would enter at 16-6 with that record instead of 22-0. They have not lost a game this year. Faflick said he has 10 days to gather at least five of the eight members of the appeals board in Topeka, along with the appealing party. Both member schools are invited to attend with the expectation that they will attend. I've been hearing that they're going to have this appeal on Tuesday. It'd be the day before state.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not ideal.
No.
Zeta's mom, Lyman, says, sub-state week, and now we're going to have to go get an attorney to defend my daughter who has done absolutely nothing wrong. Klump said she talked with Faflick, the executive director of Keisha, and he told her there are three levels of accountability: the school, the sport, and individual accountability. Zeta Perez's mom said, and I quote, "I questioned him and said, you tell me which one of those is my daughter, Zeta. Zeta found the school that had the accountability. You're taking away six games from the team already. And individual accountability is not on Zeta. That's on those who didn't fill out the form. And that's on Keisha, who didn't review the forms, to say, hey, we've got a problem." End of quote. Mays South has gone from 9 to 20 wins this season, and now 21. They're the number one seed in their Class 5A West Substate. And Faflick says he does not believe there was a sneaky or malicious intent, but upholds that the information on the transfer paperwork was not accurate. And Zeta Perez's mom says, and I quote, "If my daughter was not to play, we would have followed the rules. If my daughter was supposed to be on the pine, her butt would have been on the pine. She would have rolled six games out, sat there, and watched her team until she was eligible. But I want to know where the accountability comes in." End of quote. Okay, first of all, if the hardship form was never sent in, I don't know how you can blame Keisha, because they had no form to look over. So that's something she says that I would disagree with based on the information that I have in front of me. Is, listen, if Keisha's not going to, you know, contact every single school and say, hey, did you forget to fill out any hardship forms to send to us? That's on the schools. So the accountability to me falls on Mays South and Valley Center. It falls on those two schools in regards to the hardship form. And here's the thing I don't understand. I don't understand why they made Mays South forfeit the six games she played in. So since they forfeited, it's as if those games were never played. They just simply lost. They just changed them from W's to L's. So all those six games that she should have sat out, had the right paperwork been sent in to Keisha, which wasn't by the schools, she played no six games. They've taken away the wins from those six games. All right?
Yes.
But they didn't reseed the substate because it was already too late, which leads us to another question here in a moment. But now she is ineligible to play for six games from here on out, which means her season's over.
Yeah.
And she is a senior, I do believe.
Yeah.
So her career is over. To me, that's a double punishment. If you're going to take away the wins, you're saying that those games really never happened. You lost, you forfeited. So in essence, she didn't play in those games, even though she did. So you're taking away those wins. To me, you either go ahead and say the wins stand and she's now ineligible for six games, or you take away the wins, you make it 16-6, which will hurt them come seeding time for state,
yeah,
and then she can still play. It just seems like a double punishment to me. And I've talked to a few ADs about this recently, and they've agreed with me. They've thought the same thing. They seem like it's kind of a double punishment. Here's the next question. And I'll go back to what Mr. Faflick said, and I don't know all the details, I'll admit. But based on the information I have, Mr. Faflick has taken the high road here, and he's not going to say anything that's going to inflame the situation. But when he says to Catch at Kansas that he does not believe there was a sneaky or malicious intent, but upholds that the information on the transfer paperwork was not accurate, I call bull. I call major bull.
Same.
There's no – think about this for a second. Why was this brought to the Keisha's attention the day before substate began? I mean, somebody had to known about this since way back when she played probably in her first game. Somebody found out about it And obviously somebody probably maybe tied to Valley Center knew. I mean, you could be a little sore that she left if she was going to help your team.
Yeah.
Or there's an opposing team that isn't happy with Mays South.
That's mad that Mays South went from, what did you say, 9 to 20 wins.
Right. Or a coach or a parent. Or it could even be a parent of somebody at Mays South that's jealous of the girl getting the play. Who knows?
Exactly.
But the timing of it is tremendously suspect. The day before Substate begins, this has brought to Keisha's attention, and the girls ruled ineligible. And they're going to take away 6 wins, which will affect them come state time when they're seeding. I'm sorry. There was malicious intent. There's no question. It's pretty obvious. You can't tell me, we just discovered this the week of Substate. No. Somebody sat on this. Just like when somebody is running for a senator, a congressman, or is running to be the president of the United States of America, you might have something, and you've had it for years or for months, and you sit on it for a very long time, and you use it when it's most damaging. To me, there's no question that's what happened in this case. Whether or not you can prove that, who knows? But this really is a bum deal. Now, the next question is, what about the rule itself? Okay, she, the student, has a new permanent residence, but her dad doesn't. And I will say, the rule has to be in place. I get the rule. Because you go in the bigger cities, it is recruiting in high school. It's, hey, move here. We'll get you a job for your dad or your mom. We need a player or a running back or whatever. And you come on over here. And the coaches don't necessarily do the recruiting. It's the boosters. It's the alums. Trust me, I know this.
Yeah.
All right? And they can massage the rules. And so, hey, we'll just get somebody to move, and they buy a house or rent a place, and they move to this town. Oh, you don't have a job? Well, we'll hook you up. Or, I can still commute to my job. I'll just move to this town because they have a better athletic team or program. It happens a lot. And really, Keisha can't do much about it. Other than there's, you had permanent residence, you change your permanent residence, it's all good. In this case, to me, the Perez family, or Zeta Perez and her mom and dad, if they really were doing this, and Mays South was doing it as well on purpose, don't you think they would have understood that he needs a new permanent residence? So I don't think Mays South did it on purpose in regards to trying to circumvent the rules.
No.
And by the way, why would you risk your whole season anyway in that situation over the first 6 games of a season? So I don't believe. I think Mays South and Valley Center dropped the ball in the paperwork, obviously. And that's where the accountability should come in. And then once again, the student athlete gets punished. We see this with Sylvia DeSosa at the University of Kansas. We see this with the kid at Miami of Florida. It's always the student athlete that ends up taking the biggest punishment, and either coaches or administrators, whether it be athletic directors or whoever the adults are in the situation, seem to basically nothing happens to them. And this mom is right. Where is the accountability? You're talking about individual accountability. What did Zeta Perez do wrong? Nothing.
Not one thing.
She apparently should not have moved to Mays South and went and lived with her dad. That's the mistake she made, apparently.
Yeah, and it's definitely not. None of this is on Zeta Perez at all.
And she's a good, solid player. She's going to go to Butler Community College to play basketball. So her athletic career is not over. She's all well-rounded player. Mays South will be still pretty good without her, but she's a well-rounded player, and this will definitely hurt their chances of winning a state title without question.
Yeah, without question. And but the thing for me is, how do you – certainly they had to have sent some kind of paperwork in, but not the the hardship request.
Which, if that's the case, then you could say that mom might be right in regards to Keisha not making sure every box was checked.
Yeah.
So I could retract what I said there.
Because I'm pretty sure any time there's any kind of transfer, you have to send some paperwork in because you might be able to get that hardship. You would think that.
Right. So that, Keisha probably did miss something.
But it's still on both sides, though. Yes. You got to make sure when you get that approval from Keisha, too.
Had it been done correctly in the first place, then Keisha wouldn't have
to make sure everything is checked off, the boxes are right, and everything like that. Now, I've never seen a form for a hardship transfer or just a regular transfer based on if you move to a different location. I know one family in the area that just moved to the other side of town and their kid was eligible to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it works. And so there's somebody that obviously dropped the ball there on that, or else this wouldn't be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think you just gotta feel like first your first person at fault is whoever's running things at Mays South, because they didn't do the right thing on the hardship and put that in there, because they what I'm guessing is they felt like she changed her permanent residence and that was good enough.
And they weren't clear on the rule, perhaps.
Yeah. And so there's where your first issue lies. And I think some of it probably would fall on Keisha then to follow up and understand what this transfer request is about and to make sure that everything was done the right way. But like I said, you don't have that address if you're Keisha to know if he moved or not, if her dad moved or not,
right.
Because the only address you'll have is what they send right away. And so, yeah, it's not, but at the same time, that's like the whole family didn't move here. She just moved in with her dad. We probably need to understand this is a hardship transfer and not a regular transfer, like a family moving to a different permanent residence. I mean, they've got to know that too, that this is how it went. They can't, I wouldn't think you get a transfer request and it says that nobody moved except the kid, and then you just approve that part of the transfer request.
I agree with you.
So there's all kinds of things here that don't add up for me from both sides of it. And I agree that Mays South is the first one that you question and say that they're responsible for that. Where's the responsibility? It lies on them to get it right to start, but it also lies on Casey to understand that, how am I going to if I've approved this, how do I approve it without a hardship? If he didn't move.
Well, here's one more thing to add to the list here is Valley Center Athletic Director Caleb Smith. He's the AD of Valley Center where Zeta Perez was at.
Yeah.
So he has to fill out paperwork as well. And he says, and I quote, "All I do is look and see if the address is different from the one they enrolled with at Valley Center. That's the only thing I go off of. If they enroll at another school with a different address based on the information I have, they made a move." He goes on to say, "To me, it's a big Keisha issue on what they expect of us, the athletic directors.
Yeah.
I would also say that I don't think Keisha does a good job of training athletic directors on this, but as far as I'm concerned, I did it the right way," end of quote. So he's basically putting the burden on Keisha.
Yeah, and that's on his side. That's what he needs to focus on.
Right.
She's not in Valley Center anymore.
That's right.
That's a different address than what she enrolled at my school with.
Right.
That's all I need to know.
That's where Mays South.
I don't need to dig into
sure
that. That's
right.
Where Mays South digs in.
That's
it.
Right.
Exactly.
That's where you hand
did
it off.
Did you move? Did you change residence or whatever?
Right.
And I think I just don't think. And maybe he's right. Keisha doesn't do a good enough job of explaining and telling you that
sure.
No, it's not the kid that moves; it's the parents that have to move.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. There will be an appeal, and we'll see if something gets changed there. It's an unfortunate situation. It really is for the student athlete more than anybody else. All right. Good luck to former Trojan Blaine Harris. He's wrestling at the National Junior College Athletic Association National Wrestling Tournament this weekend. So best of luck to Blaine, the former Trojan, doing well at the next level. He's with Cloud County, correct? If I remember correctly, with the Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. So I've retweeted that out there as well. So best of luck to him. All right. So last night, pretty exciting game. Wichita State coming down the wire against UConn.
Into Haynes Jones. 4 seconds on the clock. 3. Samaje driving it on Vitale. Fall away baseline. Good. Good. He won it. Samaje Haynes Jones with a 10-foot fall away on the right baseline wins the game for Wichita State.
Shockers beat UConn 65-63 at Coke Arena, Wichita last night. Shockers now 14-13 overall, 7-8 in American Athletic Conference, which is impressive because they started 0-6. They won for the sixth time in the last 8 games. UConn's lost 6 in a row. And on top of it all, it was Greg Marshall's 300th win at Wichita State. Here's Coach Marshall on the win.
You know, there's been so many great players, and we've got great players now. Some of them are just really young, and great coaches, great crowd support, great administration. So I've had a charmed coaching life, and tonight was an example of that.
Shockers back in action Sunday at 1 o'clock. They'll be on the road at SMU. Big 12 basketball this weekend. Well, every game is important now. Everything is big. The biggest game is the next one that you play. Here's the Big 12 schedule. For tomorrow, number 15, Kansas, is at Oklahoma State. 11 a.m. pregame at 10:30 on Z96.3. The Lake, West Virginia, will be at Oklahoma at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Iowa State at Texas at 1 o'clock. It'll be Texas Tech at TCU at 3 o'clock. And Baylor at number 16, K-State, at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Huge game, of course, for K-State and Baylor. The standings, Texas Tech and K-State tied atop. The conference standings, 11-4. Kansas, Baylor, both 10-5, a game out. It seems to be it's about those four teams the rest of the way. As we said before, if Texas Tech wins out, they'll at least get a share. K-State wins out, they'll get at least a share. If Baylor wins out and Texas Tech loses once, Baylor will have a share. Kansas needs to win out, and they need Tech and K-State to each lose a game. So of all those teams, Kansas needs the most help. Oh, but yeah. Baylor has the toughest schedule. Yep. So it'll be interesting to see how K-State handles things tomorrow night. And Kansas, can they win at Stillwater against the Cowboys? And this has been a place where Kansas had all kinds of issues at Oklahoma State. When they won the national championship in 2008, if you remember, they lost at Oklahoma State. They lost Oklahoma State last year. They were swept by Oklahoma State last year. They lost at home and on the road at Oklahoma State. And this year, Oklahoma State was right there with Kansas, and Kansas made a little run early in the second half to pull away and win. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us yesterday and every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit, says, yeah, he's leery of the Cowboys too.
But to play as well as they played in Lubbock, and Self can point to that and say, hey, listen, the last two games in Lubbock, one team lost by 29, the other lost by 4 in overtime. Which one were you? And then just to remind them, hey, Oklahoma State still got plenty of firepower. So I'm glad that you're as leery of it as I am, and I think that nothing should be taken for granted on the road at all. And the fact that we lost there last year, I think that, you know, while it doesn't apply to Devon Dotson or guys that weren't here a year ago, but it is fresh in the minds of some of these Kansas players, that's a factor. There's a lot of things that should get their attention, but you're absolutely right to say that we can't chalk anything up in this series at OSU, and I think that anybody that saw them play in Lawrence, they competed really well for about 30 minutes in the Lawrence meeting too, so that should factor in as well.
I'm telling you, there's so many people outside the University of Kansas just think that Kansas has got an easy schedule. They're at Oklahoma State, then they'll go to Oklahoma and win, which they lost there last year. I could argue they were a better team last year. And they got Baylor at home, and Baylor has won in Ames, and Baylor's had a couple of good road wins. Granted, they've never beaten Kansas and Lawrence, but there's always a first time for anything. And I think people got – I'm telling you, I would not be surprised at all. And I know a lot of people just overreact and go, oh, my God, Kansas lost to a really bad Oklahoma State team. You got to understand the history. There's just certain teams that give you problems year in and year out. And Oklahoma State, this is their Super Bowl of the season. They're not going anywhere. They've got nothing to lose whatsoever. Yeah. The pressure's on Kansas. And if Oklahoma State gets out to a nice big lead early, and Kansas, we've seen, has really struggled on the road. Forget they're playing Oklahoma State. They're 2-7 on the road. This is by far not a gimme for Kansas. And then they got to turn around, even if they win, and go win at Oklahoma, who's a bubble team that has a lot to play for next Tuesday. So road games are never easy in this conference, especially for Kansas this year. And I would say not so fast when you just automatically go, well, Kansas is going to be 13-5, and K-State's got to win the table to avoid sharing it with Kansas. I mean, based on what we've seen this year, I don't see how you can say without a shadow of a doubt Kansas is just going to go ahead and win these next two games on the road.
Yeah.
Previous years you could say that, but not this year.
No, not at all. I mean, that's all we have to do is 2-7 on the road, okay? Understand.
They've lost at West Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. Understand that.
Blown out by 29 their last road game.
Yeah. They're not just going to go in there and just show up and
Ames.
Win.
I can keep going on. Blown out at Ames, blown out at Texas Tech, fortunate to win at TCU, caught Baylor at the right time, lost at West Virginia, lost at Texas, and Texas controlled that game.
Yeah, and K-State was pretty much in control the second half of their game. I mean, there was, you know, that was a little closer than the score was probably closer. I know Bill Self felt that way after the game. The score
Kansas
was
up at halftime, should have been up bigger, and then K-State took control in the second half.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, speaking of K-State, they do have Baylor tomorrow night. Riley Gates of Go Power Cat joins us every Tuesday, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric in Beloit as well. And he talks about the matchup against the Bears tomorrow night.
It's a team that I could see K-State blowing out, and it's a team that I could see winning here in Manhattan. I would feel a lot more comfortable, obviously, if it was like an Oklahoma State or somebody. But I think that every team left on the schedule, with the exception of probably Oklahoma, you got to look at it and say, okay, a tough matchup, a good team, but also not a team that K-State should lose to. I mean, they're probably going to be favored in every game the rest of the way. There's no reason they shouldn't beat every team the rest of the way.
If K-State is the best team in the Big 12, and I think based on their body of work this year, they and Tech are, then you win these last three games. You don't have to play Tech. You don't have to play Iowa State anymore. You do not have to play Kansas. You're done with all of them. Two of your last three are at home. Baylor, home. Oklahoma, home. You shouldn't lose those games.
No.
So the one that should be the question mark would be the road game at TCU. And I still think if they lose at TCU and they have five losses, I think Tech's still going to lose a game, although they've been playing really well lately. Although they did struggle against Oklahoma State the other night, and I think that's because they just overlooked them. I think K-State will still get a share of the title, even if they would lose at TCU. Now, K-State doesn't want to share the title. I get that. But I think it would take a collapse by Kansas State to not get at least a share of this title. Oh, they'd have to lose two out of three, I think.
Yeah, and I would. I think I'd agree with that. That's the word though is collapse because it would be a collapse but you know with everything they're dealing with you know two of their starters not really practicing at all right now, Kamal Stokes and Dean Wade, and no Cartier Jada, and you can look at some of these games and think, well, they should win these games, but when they went down to Baylor and won. Jotto was a pretty key factor down the stretch in that game. So you don't have him, and Baylor's got guys back. So you understand you got to win this game.
But they went to Texas and won without Jotto, right?
They did,
that.
Yeah, right off the bat. But, it's a game that you have to have here. I think you got to win the two home games if you want to have any kind of chance here.
I agree. You got to hold serve.
It would be a collapse if they don't do it. And right now, I can't sit here and say that I'm 100% confident that K-State's going to win two out of the next three games all three games to just win out and not have any issue with it. They know if they went out, there's no question about it.
Right.
They've got at least a share of the championship if they went out.
Right, I think it's going to be a really tough game tomorrow night. Baylor's got everything to play for. They still have a chance to win the Big 12. Baylor's playing good ball. They're getting healthier. K-State caught them at a good time when Baylor was without a couple key players, and yet Baylor almost beat K-State down in Waco. They have a zone that gives, we know K-State's not usually that good against the zone, although at times lately they've been better. This is a tough game tomorrow night for K-State, even though it's at home. In other news, well, if you didn't like Monday Night Football and didn't care for Jason Witten, good news. He's unretiring, and he's going back to the Cowboys. I'm not surprised by this. He was a football lifer. I was surprised he retired last year, to be honest with you. Yeah. I'm not surprised he's going back. After a one-year hiatus, he's pulled a boxing move. I'm retired, and I'm never going to fight again. Yeah, whatever. He pulled a Michael Jordan and a Brett Favre. Okay, I'm done. No, I'm not. He's coming back. A one-year, $5 million deal with the Dallas Cowboys. Jason Witten returning to the football field, which means there's an opening for a color analyst on Monday Night Football, and I guarantee you, who ESPN's going to go after. Any ideas?
Come on. My brain's not working right.
It's obvious. What guy is out there? Tony Romo's had so much success, a former quarterback. It's the obvious choice.
Oh, my
obvious
goodness.
Choice. What's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time? Come on, you tell me he's maybe the greatest.
Oh, Peyton?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning would be terrific.
Oh, yeah, he would.
He'd be phenomenal. He'd probably be maybe even better than Romo. That's who ESPN tried to get last year. They're going to try to get him again. They're going to throw a lot of money at him. I don't know if he's going to do it, but that's the guy they're going to go after, and I think he'd be much better than Jason Witten. Nice guy, but Jason Witten was, he was in over his head. No sportscasting experience in his history, which that's what really bothers me about these big gigs. They just get a name, throw him out there. I remember Joe Montana was in studio after he retired for NBC's pregame show. He was god-awful.
Yeah.
But it's almost like they didn't even rehearse or audition him. Eric Dickerson was a sideline reporter on Monday Night Football 1 year. Most definitely Al. Most definitely Al. Most definitely Al. He was a train wreck. How in the world? You think people tune in to watch Eric Dickerson give a sideline report? You think people tune in because Joe Montana's behind a desk and can't talk? I mean, what goes into these corporate heads? We need seven people on the Fox pregame show? We need Tony Gonzalez now, Michael Strahan. We had Howie Long, we had Strahan, we had Jimmy Johnson, Terry Bradshaw, and Kurt Menefee. Now we added Tony Gonzalez. Less time for each of them to talk, and you're all paying them a lot of money. We don't need that many people to talk. We really don't. They just need two or three guys at most. And by the way, we don't need Boomer Esiason and Bill Cowher doing the highlights when James Brown's sitting right next to Phil Simms. There must be something that shows their ratings are higher because they've got some guys that are former jocks. And by the way, Boomer Esiason and Phil Simms aren't bad. They're not bad at what they do. But Eric Dickerson was a train wreck. Jason Witten was a train wreck on Monday Night Football. I know Booger McFarland isn't a lot better myself. I don't think he's great either, but he's better than Witten. I just don't like it. In our profession, it bugs me when you just throw people that have no experience and just, especially in that marquee of a position.
Yeah.
And you really set him up to fail is what you did. And he can't wait to go back and play football.
Yeah.
And he makes some of those, playing football,
yeah,
obviously.
And that's not just football specific either. Yeah. You know, there's guys that are doing stuff every big sport, and it's like, what are they doing? Like,
I know.
But then you gotta, like, ESPN pulls Bobby Knight from the studio and puts him on color, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I really liked what he did in the studio
because
he could break stuff down. Exactly. He had the time to break stuff down and process it. And when he didn't have the time to break down and process, he was not good as a color commentator at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, but that's another name. You know, they had him on regardless of whether it was going to work or not. His name was there, and they felt like that was bigger than having a quality broadcast, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just like I say, there's examples of it everywhere where it's just like, how did they get this job?
Right. And then the big news, of course, in baseball yesterday is Bryce Harper. He gets a new deal. $330 million as a free agent. He gets a record-breaking deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. And it's an interesting deal because last year he hit .249 with 34 homers. He's 26 years of age, a Major League Baseball best, 330 walks. But he's still in the prime of his career, although he's had some injury problems as well. He gets a $330 million deal. I believe he gets a $20 million signing bonus. And the deal is 13 years for $330 million. So, actually, it's less money per year than Machado. $26 million a year, I think, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
But he gets $20 million up front. Machado got $300 million over 10 years, and Harper gets $330 over 13. Plus, does the $330 include the $20 million signing?
I don't think so.
Okay, so then in essence, he gets $350 million. So, really, it's about the same kind of deal as Machado has, just worded and structured differently. Listen, Harper... his effort's better than Manny Machado.
Oh, yeah.
But if you had to choose who you're going to give $300 million to and you had to choose Machado or Harper, who would you choose?
I would choose Machado.
I would, too.
I think he brings more to the table.
I do, too. I would, too, even though he doesn't hustle sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, Harper just is he's, and they're both can be distractions, by the way. But Machado, Harper, to me, is just not – I know batting average isn't everything, but he's kind of up and down a little bit. And, of course, he has an injury history.
I think Bryce Harper right now, as it sits, is the most overvalued free agent of all time in Major League Baseball.
I think he's one of, yes.
I mean, just based on everything you just said, and I don't think – he's a stud. He's going to bring in
– sure.
He's going to bring fans.
Yeah.
If Philly's ever hurting for that.
Right.
Which I don't think they are.
Right.
But, you know, they can turn that around. Philly, they'll be there for Philly. But I just don't. I don't feel like he's anywhere near. Nobody's anywhere near worth what he got.
I don't.
Doesn't matter who it is. But I just think he's in of free agents that I know of, and you know their popularity and everything like that. I feel like he's just way overvalued.
13 years, $330 million, setting the record for the largest free agent contract in Major League Baseball history. Machado got 10 for 300. Harper's going to receive $10 million in addition to his $20 million signing bonus in 2019. So he's getting paid, I guess, $10 million salary this year. Is that how it's going to work, plus the $20 million? And I'm going to pull this up and see. Here we go. Yep, that's the deal. Now I found it. Took a little while to pull it up online. He's going to get paid $10 million in salary this year, plus a $20 million signing bonus. So just go ahead and call it $30 million. Then he's going to get $26 million in 2020, 2021, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. In 2029, 2030, and 2031, he gets $22 million a year. To put this in perspective, at the age of 38, 12 years from now, he'll make $22 million whether he plays baseball or not.
All that money's coming. There are no opt-outs in that clause.
There are no
in that contract at
and
all.
And all baseball contracts are guaranteed money.
Yeah.
There is no NFL, cut the guy, and you're all good.
That's it's the crazy thing about that is not that the Phillies
these contracts don't usually work out.
It's not that the Phillies didn't put an opt out for them. It's that the Bryce Harper that didn't put an opt out for him.
Right.
Like he's banking on Philly for 13 years finishing his career there without question.
Unless he demands a trade.
You know,
that can easily happen.
Yeah, that's the only way.
In his final 3 years, he's going to be paid $22 million at the age of 37, 38, and 39. So safe to say the guy is set for the rest of his life, unless he's not very bright and blows it somehow, some way. By the way, one more thing to throw out there. This is the society that we live in today. The spin on the English language. You ready? We know all about the spin with politicians, right?
Yes.
You know, it's not lying. It's constructive, not telling the truth. I mean, they come up with stuff. There's all kinds of weird things.
Alternative facts.
Yeah, there we go. That's what we're not lying. It's alternative facts. So they're facts that aren't true. But we call them alternative facts. Okay, whatever. I'm watching ESPN. I caught a glimpse of this, I think, yesterday or the day before. And I mentioned this the other day when LeBron James, the story about him being out and about with a rapper in studio, so forth and so on. He sat out a game against the Warriors. They called it load management, which was his rest. In the past, every time a team, you know, if Kawhi Leonard sat for the Spurs, the scroll always said, Leonard will not play, Duncan will not play, in parentheses, rest. Now,
one time they put old in the box score.
Oh, they put old?
Duncan, it said did not play old in the box score.
I like that. Well, now I see last night, I think it was yesterday, DeMarcus Cousins will not play for the Warriors tonight. And then in parentheses, which makes the scroll even longer, load management reasons. What is this world coming to? I thought we were trying to shorten things. You know, LOL, OMG, FYI, BTW. If you don't know any of these, by the way, just call me and I'll fill you in on all of them because I'm really hip with this stuff. Actually, there's some stuff I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I have no idea. But we want to shorten things, right? We're too lazy and we want to shorten things. And then we have the nice, easy, four-letter word called rest. That's what they're doing. They're resting. They just need a break. Put rest, need a break. That's still shorter than load management reasons. Could we make the word rest become any longer and bigger? And then it's funny because it takes 10 seconds to read it as it scrolls at the bottom of ESPN. You would think of all the people that would say, let's just stick with rest. So what's the deal? The NBA saying, I'm sure it's an NBA thing saying, say the word rest because that means you're purposely holding them out because they're tired. So you say load management reasons. That's a fancy way to say the fans are stupid and they'll buy it.
Yeah.
And exactly. Guess what? I'm not stupid.
No.
I might not be the smartest guy in the world, but that's called rest.
Yeah.
Dusty, I just want you to know that I'm going to not come to work on Sunday due to load management reasons, okay?
Yeah.
Instead of a day of rest on Sunday that we talk about, you know, on God made Sunday for a day of rest. No, he made it for a day of load management reasons.
Yes.
That's what he meant. Are you kidding me? What else can we come up with to make things more complicated in this world today? 10:03 is our time. Okay, recap the schedule for tonight.
Yes, on Katy Country 94.3A Substate Boys Semifinals. Pregame coverage 5:45. Tip-off at 6, number 1, below against number 4 seed St. Mary's. Also online video at ncastsports.com. And then tonight on Z96.3, 5:45, pregame tip at 6, St. John's Tipton Boys against Blue Valley Randolph. We'll 1-8 substate in Waubunsie. And also online at katycountry94.com here tonight for that Class 1A substate semifinal.
All right, and then recap the time changes for tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow championship games again out at Clay Center. The girls' championship at 2, boys at 3:30. And then at Waubunsie, the girls' championship at 4 o'clock, boys at 5:30. And those games out west on Saturday out in Great Bend, girls' championship at 2 o'clock, boys at 3:30. And then in Trigo, Waukini there, 5:30 girls' championship and a 7 o'clock boys' start time on Saturday evening.
All right, best of luck to Lady Blue Jays, Lady Longhorns tomorrow night in sub-state finals. Best of luck to all our area teams competing tonight in sub-state semifinals. And hopefully we'll have some teams to talk about Monday on the Sports Ticket going into state tournament competition. Enjoy your day. Thanks for tuning in.